Welcome to Weekly Insights at Winthrop Capital Management, where we discuss recent developments currently shaping the markets and industries in the global economy. Here's your host, Chief Investment Officer Greg Hahn.
Hey, good morning, everybody. Happy Monday. Welcome. All right, so we've got a lot to cover. Before we dig in, I want to make sure that we get this scheduling for the rest of the month out, because next Monday is Memorial Day, Adam. So we need to, I think we're going to do the call on Tuesday next week, right? So we'll skip Monday.
Yep.
So today we're going to outline a framework to think about investing for the remainder of 2020, which seems kind of odd because here we are in May talking about investing for 2020, but this is just like no other period in investment history or history of the capital markets. We're going to talk about changes in our portfolio models, also some equity earnings that we've gone through, and then we've got some highlights on the fixed income side as well. So we got a lot to cover. Let me kick it off and provide just a brief framework, and then Freddie, I'm going to kick it over to you to talk about portfolio models and earnings. And Adam, I know you're prepped there too. But in the context of where we are, remember two things. This is one huge experiment that we are living through, and we came into this period of time coming off of a great experiment in recovery from the financial crisis in 2008 and 2009. And all of this is testing the limits of monetary policy. So we are living a whole new paradigm for what monetary policy and stimulus is in our markets. So the capital markets are responding well, but remember, we separate what's going on in the economy with separate from the financial system and separate from the capital markets, because they're going to move differently. Now, the economy is just it's just going through nothing short of horrific. So we expect domestic economic growth now to decline close to 5% for the first quarter, and then for the year, it's going to be probably down 3%. Unemployment is, we had 3 million people file for unemployment benefits last week, which brings the total to 36.5 million since the whole pandemic started. So now think about this in two stages. We're moving through this whole crisis in two stages. The initial stage, which is probably the first 3 months of this, is navigating the abrupt shutdown of the economy and the impact that it has on businesses. So the first stage is basically survival. This includes making sure that companies have right-sized their expenses, they're facing deteriorating revenue, and their liquidity isn't sufficient to support their operations in the near-term future. That's what's being that's happening right now. It's most prevalent. We're seeing it in the airline and retail industries, as well as you see it in restaurants, some of the service industries, but also in higher education. So we're going to talk about higher education over the next couple weeks, but is stressed business model that we would argue probably is not working, and we expect a massive change in what higher education looks like over the next 10 years and the impact that that has on the economy. But let's move to the second stage, because we're about to move into the second stage of what this looks like. And it's going to be characterized by adapting the company to a new competitive environment. But it's coming into this, the companies are coming into this potentially with impaired financial statements. So the transition into the second stage, which we expect to happen here at the end of the second quarter, is will exist for the remainder of the year. This will be characterized by slow revenue growth, cost containment. We want to identify companies that can compete over the long term, shift their business models, and avoid credit problems. So companies are going to have to rebuild disrupted supply chains, their supply network. The industries that are going to be impacted in the second stage are going to be real estate, airline, travel, obviously retail, but also energy, manufacturing, and look at the chemicals industry as well. This second stage will impact people, probably how people gather. This is going to include, this is going to impact our summer, but tourism, travel, recreational sports, concerts, fairs, basically our whole summer lifestyle. We're going to have to figure out how to gather together safely, regardless of whether we have a vaccine or not, or a way to control this. It's still going to have, we're still going to have a new best practice in terms of how we come together in society. And it's going to impact these business models. So we look at municipal bonds of small universities, but also municipal bonds that support arena financings, convention centers, and those that derive their debt service payments from revenues that support the facilities, because the convention business is going to be slow to pick up, but we do expect it to pick up in the second half. So with that, I'm going to turn this over. We're going to come back to this in a second, but I'm going to turn over this paradigm now to talk about how it impacts our portfolio models, and then how we're looking at the equity portfolio. So I'm going to shift it over to Freddie.
Thanks, Greg. So in models, we are reducing our exposure, continuing to, at least in international sleeves, both developed and emerging. Like you said, we don't see any clear catalyst for growth there. So we're focusing our exposure on domestic large cap, and we're building defense by adding to USMV, the low vol ETF, and then Schwab D, that's the large cap dividend ETF. So both are underperforming the index year to date. Schwab D also offers us more exposure to defensive sectors and a dividend yield of 3.7%. So that's against the index yield of just over 2%. So those are the moves that we are currently making in our tactical series.
We talk about business models that don't work. And one of the reasons we're reducing the international exposure is because of the ETF weights to Europe. And we think Europe is not necessarily a business model, but it's a model that's not working as they struggle with supporting the currency. But at the same time, the differences in how they manage their fiscal positions and the deficits that they separately use to fund their individual countries, but collectively how that impacts the European Union in the absence of a common taxing authority and a common bonding authority, the currency we don't think can stand on its own for a prolonged period of time. So we want to reduce exposure. And at the same time, you're going to read about China doing better. But as we talk about supply chains reshifting, and that's going to be over the next 3 to 5 years, it's going to impact China probably. So this is going to take a long time to play out. Anything else, you guys, on the portfolio models that we're considering this week?
We're continuing to increase the allocation to low volatility. So I think just over time, as we see equity markets rally, you'll see us take down just the generic large cap basis and move more into a low volatility. I mean, today we're up, looks like 2.5% up pre-market. Yeah. So.
Yes. Yeah. We got a strong open.
Right.
Now on the fixed income side of our models, we've primarily used short credit, which has not necessarily worked the best when you compare that to government related issuance or mortgage backed issuance. Do you guys have any comments on what we're thinking in terms of the second half of the year?
So one thing we did also last week is we reduced or eliminated the emerging market sleeve that we had, emerging market debt in our core sector series. So that's a place that's underperformed. You've got two issues there. First, a stronger dollar is going to continue to hurt emerging market debt because most of that is denominated in dollars, so that the cost to pay it back is going up. The other obviousness of that is that the emerging markets are just struggling even more with this kind of economic shutdown. So moving more defensive there, but with spreads are still wide, twice as wide as they were last year. So investment grade spreads are in the 200 range on the index. This time last year were at plus 100. So I think that's one place we're continuing to look. We were talking about LQD, that's the most liquid. And as the Fed is at least saying that they're going to buy corporate debt and starting with those ETFs, I think that is one place we're looking to put back into portfolios. I don't know if you have any thoughts there, Greg.
So I'm going to shift over to the equity side just to keep moving here. But we wrote a piece at the beginning of the pandemic about five stocks that would weather the storm. Do you remember that piece? How do you guys, first off, how are those stocks performing? And then would you change any of those five stocks at this point? So we had Amazon, Microsoft, Google, Lockheed Martin.
Yeah, and Johnson & Johnson. Those are the five. And since we recommended those five, all have weathered the storm very well, actually in the green. And as for changing them, I wouldn't say so because, I mean, so you have Microsoft, Google, Lockheed all report earnings over the last couple of weeks. We saw strength in pretty much all of their segments. And I think going forward, COVID's not over yet. So having those as core holdings is probably a good idea for any portfolio.
Yeah, to reiterate on that is that, you know, the point of that were companies that they would weather the storm because people are still spending money there. And the two biggest places that people are still spending money is A, defense. You've seen every aerospace company try to focus as much as they can because that is still a place that's government spending. And then on the corporate side, I mean, the increase in spending on technology is large and getting larger as you're seeing. Companies like Twitter have now moved to they're going to let their workers work remotely indefinitely. You've got Facebook and Google saying till the end of the year. Amazon is contemplating going indefinite for part of their workforce. So you still this move to working remotely is not over.
Right. So now this is the second push in companies working remote. We went through this 5 years ago, and it didn't seem to stick. But this time around, we've got tools like Zoom and Microsoft Teams and probably another set of incentives. But it seems that productivity, companies are better able to measure productivity of individuals working remotely and better able to manage that. So the impact, one of the consequences of that is going to be in the commercial real estate market, where the footprint that companies need to support employees is going to be smaller, which I think justifies kind of our position in underweighting that whole REIT marketplace, but urges caution in the commercial mortgage loan space as well.
Well, all right. Density is not an issue, right? And I think density is not an issue anymore. So if you're a New York-based company, you don't have to hire just in New York, right? You can hire anyone if you're working remotely. So that's a big shift.
Right, and it takes them off public transportation and just yep. keeps them safer and provides perhaps a better quality of life experience too. Anything else on earnings, Freddie, that you've got up your sleeve?
Yeah, just to go over the upcoming week earnings calendar. Tuesday, tomorrow, Home Depot, Kohl's, Walmart. Wednesday, Lowe's and Target. Thursday, Medtronic, Intuit, and Nordstrom. And then Friday, VF Corp. So very consumer discretionary heavy this week.
Mm-hmm. On the focus growth, go ahead, Adam. Go ahead.
I was going to say, just to give a kind of an overview of how the earnings season has gone. So FactSet put out their report card. So again, 90% of the companies have released earnings so far for Q1. 65% of those had an earnings beat, and 57 had a revenue beat. But I would say that was on a really, really low bar. So I think that's kind of what's driving equity markets right now, too, is just all these earnings and revenue beats.
So how do you, I mean, with a lot of companies now removing guidance for the rest of the year, how do you, as an investor, fundamental investor that analyzes companies, how do you navigate these individual financial statements and business models? How do you invest? I know that's a big open-ended question. We could spend hours on this.
Okay, that's what I was laughing at is of the 90% have released, of those 500 companies, only 25 gave any guidance. So yeah, you're just in some ways flying blind, which is why I would come back to our top five. You gotta look at companies that revenue stream is more predictable, and we know they're still spending. You know, some of these companies where it's a complete guess. I mean.
Well, and this is a nod to Lance, but when do you switch and you look at companies like Ford and GE? So GE's market cap now is lower than Netflix and Tesla. GE was, you know, this was a one of the Dow stocks. This was this was an icon in the business world, and now it's down, I think, below 50 billion. When do you start looking at some of these fallen, beaten down companies and their their stocks when they're, are they ever too cheap? I guess that's the question. I mean, Ford is under $5 a share now. Okay, I'll take that. Let's let's shift over to the fixed income side, Adam. Go ahead.
Yeah, so just really quickly, there's another fairly heavy week, over $50 billion in issuance. But you are seeing it kind of slow down. Like you mentioned, we got a holiday weekend coming up, so this week is going to be much lighter. But those kind of larger concessions, the 10 basis points, made spreads overall widen out. But I think as we move into the summer months, as it slows down, we'll see spreads kind of strengthen back up. So overall, kind of a quiet week. Rates were down last week, but the 10-year is at 64 basis points, so no real major moves. I did want to highlight, we were talking about kind of areas that we're invested in or not invested in. So corporate credit has bounced back. It's actually moved positive year-to-date last week, so that's positive for that. So it's outperforming the S&P 500 by almost 10%. But we talked about TIPS. Those have been a stronger performer this year. They're up 5% year to date. But on the other side of that, you've got bank loans. The ticker BKLN is the bank loan ETF, is down 7.5% year to date. A lot of energy there, a lot of retail, and a lot of airlines. These are high yield loans that we would stay away from here. And then we just talked about emerging markets, where those are down 8% year to date. So the fixed income fund market is definitely, there's a wide gap in return. So just caution there in some of these sectors where we see a lot of bankruptcies coming in the coming months. And so as I'm talking about high yield, I'll switch over to Charlie.
Thanks. Yeah, I'll keep it somewhat brief since we're crunched for time. But yeah, I've seen, as Adam was saying, with investment grade credit being more technical in nature recently, you're definitely seeing the same with high yield. High yield last week was out about 25 basis points, and that's due to still continued really strong primary market that last week saw $12 billion in volume. And like investment grade credits, these concessions are coming down to pretty much zero. They're being priced to perfection on existing curves, and with that, you're seeing that performance on the breaks being varying very much on a name by name basis. So this time of high yield issuance immediately trading up multiple points is all but done. Despite that, we're seeing still super heavy inflows from retail investors into high yield ETF bond funds. So this week we saw investors buy $4.5 billion in high yield ETFs and mutual funds. And so really the only thing I can see here is that retail investors are continuing to grab this high yield for additional income source, despite the rest of the investment world really kind of pulling back on these high yield funds. Another thing I wanted to note, and this is more in a sector on what we're not really investing in, is that we've talked about before, these retail companies are under immense pressure. So last week we saw April data. Sales fell month over month 16%. That's after already a terrible March decline. And the only positive news tidbit was that non-store retail sales continue to increase. So stalwarts such as Macy's and Nordstrom have been under immense pressure. I've seen that estimates show that Macy's probably can only run for another 6 months without issuing new debt. And so it is expected that Macy's is going to file suit of Nordstrom, Gap, and Kohl's to issue out retail or real estate secured debt that may or may not include their super famous properties such as Herald Square. But I would caution investors to sit on the sidelines with this, because we also expect that commercial real estate, especially in the retail sector, is going to be under huge pressure. So I wouldn't be too terribly comfortable taking these bonds with the real estate backing.
Yep. So it took JCPenney. I mean, JCPenney struggled for over 5 years. So interesting. And these are business. This is what we talked about at the beginning. These are business models that were stressed coming into the coronavirus. So the coronavirus really just exposed how brick and mortar retail is just challenged, and the cost structure supporting that business model. internet, the online model. So anyway, all right, you guys, anything else for the good of the cause?
Nothing here.
It's just a different, yeah, it's a different world. And so the themes that we have are defense and portfolios. The market's responding really well to the stimulus, and we want to, as volatility starts to come down overall, we want to build defense back into portfolios. So that's just the general theme heading into the end of the second quarter here. So we've got a full week ahead of us. So you guys be safe, and we'll catch up next Tuesday. Thank you. Bye-bye.
All investments are subject to risk, including the possible loss of the money you invest. The information presented in this podcast is intended for educational purposes only and does not take into consideration your personal circumstances or other factors that may be important in making investment decisions. You may access and download this podcast only for your personal and non-commercial use. You may not use it in any other manner or for any other purpose without Winthrop's written permission. Copyright 2020, Winthrop Capital Management, LLC. All rights reserved.